Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Clinical psychologist and writer Dr. Maureen Gaffney, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
Nice to see
and
you
happy
again,
Christmas.
Maureen. Yes, happy Christmas. Do people enjoy Christmas in general?
I think they do. I think the world divides really into people who love Christmas and people who dread it. The people who love it, if you ask them, they love everything about it. They love the anticipation. They love the shopping. They love the presents. They love the day itself. They love the turkey. They love getting together with their family. They love all the socialising before, during and after. And those who dread it, if you ask them why they dread it, they give you exactly the same reasons.
All those things, okay. You would say rituals are good for us in general?
Christmas really is an extraordinary day when you think about it. I mean, particularly nowadays where people have a very strong sense of personal freedom to celebrate things the way they want to or not celebrate at all.
Mm.
But there's huge pressure at Christmas to do something and to do it. Even though people, you know, and read articles on magazines about, you know, how to ring the changes and, you know, they appear like clockwork every year. But in fact, the press of tradition is very strong because at Christmas, you generally speaking, families get together. There's a lot of pressure to go home, or if you are an adult child, particularly a daughter, and you have a house, then at some point in the life cycle, you're expected to take over the responsibility.
And is it more intense than your normal family gathering? You say Christmas is like an X-ray.
It is. Because of all of the, it's that mix really of expectation about what's going to happen on the day. Despite any experience you might have, you still feel that this year might be different. This year might actually look a bit like the ads, you know, where these rosy faced children and, you know, deliriously happy adults like are all having this great time together with this perfect feast in front of them. What's really extraordinary is that we have this image, we hold on to this image, despite the fact that when you ask people immediately after Christmas, when the memory is fresh, when you ask them, how did Christmas actually go? About 75% of people say it was reasonably satisfactory, which I take to mean it was all right. And about 15% say it was happy enough. Or some think it was very happy, and 10% say it was truly miserable. Now, if you look at those figures together, it's hardly a ringing endorsement for the season, but nonetheless, the expectations run high.
So I suppose issue number one, when as you say, this pressure to come home, I've never heard come home sound more ominous. everyone reverting to their assigned roles in the family is the classic problem.
Well, that's
problem
right.
Here,
yeah,
it
really is the most extraordinary example of regression. You know, you can be a very successful person in the world, you know, in however you define success, you may have your own way of doing things, etc. And every year you go home and you remind yourself on the way up or down to your family, I'm okay, my life is okay, you know, but you're mentally anticipating certain tensions that arise. And you go in and I swear within 5 or 6 minutes, you can feel your heart thumping a bit. You can feel that sort of tightening in your in your gut, you know. And often I think it would just be so amusing and revealing if, you know, you had a sort of a cartoon of people, you know, saying, you had thought bubble saying, you know, this, you know, each other, saying things to each other. And then you had another bubble, as it were, that really reveals what they're thinking.
Yeah, but do you know what the thing is? You don't need it because everyone knows what everyone's thinking.
That's right.
Let's face it.
You
like,
know,
Irish people are masters at passive aggression.
Yeah, but you have that
we?
Sense of, you know, there she goes again.
There she goes again.
I can't bear to listen.
Someone
to
should
this
make
again.
Christmas cards with "there she goes again" written on it. No, the thing is, though, like, we are adults. We do have agency. We can choose to kind of try and let things go and flow through it. Your tip is substitute fascination for annoyance. I like this.
Yeah, that's something I learned on a course I was on many years ago. And we were told at the beginning that we would have to work in pairs. You know, we'd had a sort of a chat together, you know, beforehand, all the people who were part of this. And to my horror, I was assigned this guy that I had talked to earlier. And I'd say he was equally horrified to be assigned to me, because if there were two people who disagreed on everything important in life, it was the two of us. And I thought, like, I can't go through the next few days feeling irritated. So I decided I would be fascinated instead and try and figure out, how does someone like that come to believe certain things? How do they come to think that it's okay to say things or think things like they do? And honestly, it was fascinating.
So a version of that thing they say, become the observer, like, rather than being caught up in the rapids of
right.
the moment.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
okay.
Right.
So stand back a little bit.
Yes, but stand back with a good heart, as it were.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Yeah. So we're a benevolent anthropologist, like, rather than a judgy anthropologist.
Yeah.
All right. So I suppose one of the other issues is all the generations together too. And we've talked before about grandparents and grandchildren do get a lot from each other, don't they? But then
huge. There's usually a very strong bond between them. Well, when you think about it, in Ireland anyway, the only time you see your extended family, that there's a gathering of your extended family, is a wedding or a funeral. And nowadays, because there's so much financial pressure on young couples, you know, they very often, you know, can't invite, you know, as in the old days, like, you invited everybody, you know, or you felt you had to. But at Christmas, there is pressure to, as it were, go home in that sense, or to bring everybody home to you. And I think that what you get then is, if you add in a couple of stray relatives, you know, like an aunt or an uncle or something, you get this extraordinary gathering of people who don't normally have much to do with each other, now stuck together, like, for several hours. And there's a huge amount of negotiation beforehand. With the misfortunate person who's hosting the Christmas having to negotiate with everybody about mainly issues of timing. When should they arrive? When will they sit down for dinner? You know, and then the evening, there's more negotiation about what happens then, you know, like older people. And maybe somebody who's had enough of the whole day wants to go to bed, but they can't really leave decently, you know, while the party is in full swing.
Yeah.
And the kids, of course, are negotiating exactly the opposite. They want to stay up as long as possible.
So are you saying, though, have the negotiations, that people actually try and talk things out in advance, maybe?
Well, you're kind of stuck with it anyway. My mother, when my dad died, my mother used to... We used to go down to her for Christmas for an awful long time. But then at a certain point, you know, she wasn't really able for it, and she'd come up to us. And I swear there'd be a phone call every day for maybe 3 weeks coming up to Christmas, where she would tell me again about her plans. I'll be on the train, you know, it'll get in at this time. Be sure to be there now on the platform, because I've a lot of luggage, you know, and that would go on for so long. And then no sooner would Christmas be over and it would start about going home and, you know, would I be sure to drive her back to the station? And when she got older, of course, we had to go down and collect her and drive her home. And I think that happens much more than people think, that families do go to an awful lot of trouble, I think, at Christmas to I suppose, get the clan together, you know. And I think
how was your mother with your parenting? Because I have a few texts there of people saying it's lovely having the grandparents up and everything, but they start the parenting tips as soon as they arrive in the door and they disapprove
of this and that. Well, long before, you know.
But I suppose when it's in situ happening live.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, I remember in our case, my mother had a very sweet tooth, you know, and we had started, you know, like most parents do, you know, to try and limit sugar, you know, complete failure, needless to say. But my mother, even though we would say to her, you know, coming up to the Christmas and during it, you know, like, don't give the kids any sweets. Do you think it stopped her? Never, you know, so... I think that these little things, you know, can create, you know, this sort of low level tension. And eventually, you know, you find like that you better take a very deep breath or go outside for 2 minutes, you know, because that tension is going to spill over into an argument. And of course, once you have an argument, then, you know, the game is lost, you know, because then that goes on, you know, and everybody then
really
makes
there's no
a big
sense
effort.
That the air gets cleared. No, sometimes I think a big blowout like and everyone gets it.
Well,
out of the system.
I would say, Brendan, maybe now you're good at blowouts, but I would say that if you're going to have the blowout or the big talk, I think have it well before Christmas and, you know, call a truce at Christmas. You know.
Okay, I'm not suggesting any of this relates to anything to do with any generation of my family, Maureen Gaffney. Jeez, you'll have my Christmas ruined before it even starts. What about just deciding not to go? I think a lot of people just have decided, I can't do it. It's bad for my mental health. It sets me back. Whatever journey I'm on in life, I'm not doing it.
I think some people do that, and I have friends who are single who often do that. You know, they book a very nice holiday or break for themselves, and some go off on their own at Christmas, and of course the circumstances of their lives may make that the sensible choice. You know, if relationships are fraught, or simply if they are single in particular, that they feel they don't want to do Christmas in that big family way. Mm-hmm. So I think
so. That's okay, is it? Like to prioritize yourself over your duty to the collective.
But within limits, you know, because if everybody did that, then I think there would be, you know, I think the consequences wouldn't be good.
There'd
be a loss at some point.
You need to be the first one in, basically. There's and then everyone else would go, damn, they pulled that one.
Often people, you know, say to themselves after Christmas, this is the last time I'm doing this. Mm. But by the time Christmas comes, you know, stuff has happened. You know, maybe older people in the family have had a bit of a health setback or indeed any kind of setback during the year. You know, other younger people can have setbacks as well. And I think there is that sense of, you know, I'll give it another go, And maybe this time it will it'll work out. And,
but
and
you
I
do
think
point out that each Christmas is unique. That it's good to remember that it's a different stage.
It,
and
it is the, when you think about the when you imagine now the people that are going to be around your table as a family, they are never again the children, the older adults, yourself. Anybody, they're never again going to be at this age. They're never again going to be at this stage of life. And they're never again going to be in the particular circumstances that they're in. And I think that is, I think Christmas, it's great to mark that. It's great to actually say, and sometimes to say it together. Like we're all here together for better or for worse. And that's an important thing to celebrate.
So you get everyone with that. They were never going to be these people. Or the kids are never going to be that age again. And the host, in terms of the negotiations, the host can often be maybe reluctant to take help or, you know, not want to ask for help or whatever. But I presume there should be negotiations around that as well.
Well, some families do that very well, particularly if there are a lot of sisters. You know, they work out because they're because as women mainly take responsibility for making the Christmas. They take a, you know, they figure out like, you know, look, I'll do the starter or the salad or the dessert or something. And I think that's great. I mean, I think that's absolutely fantastic if people can do that, because then everybody feels that they've helped to make the Christmas. But
and the person at the centre of it is might be slightly less angry as well, because the person who does take on everything can sometimes then get angry about it.
They're less burdened. I mean, I love cooking and I absolutely love, everybody in our family loves Christmas dinner, you know, the actual dinner itself. And I know that I have never got it to work, the whole thing, in that way that magazines and, you know, people on the radio tell you that you can. I remember one year I was following a timing program. I had loads done on Christmas Eve, and on Christmas morning I was powering through the whole thing, and I the table set, the whole business, and then I remembered with horror that I hadn't put the turkey in the oven. And we ended up eating at 9 o'clock that night, you know. So I think you have to build in a lot of forgiveness, you know, that it's a big enterprise and it's not just the food and all the organisation. It's also someone taking responsibility to pull everybody together, even if it's just for a few hours.
OK, and, so we need to try and be a little bit flexible maybe as well and not so rigid. Listen to this. Hi, Brendan. Listening as I put up the outside Christmas decorations in preparation for the adult children's homecoming. Three daughters and their partners and kids are all abroad. When they're home for Christmas, I put them in a rented house down the road. It works a treat. But there's a serious point there. Space.
Yeah,
can be
right.
A lifesaver, can't it?
That's
and
right.
Even taking bits of space, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, money doesn't solve everything, but it does reduce stress. And if you can afford to do that, that's great. And some people go even further and they do everything in a hotel, you know. Not everybody can do that, or even if they could, will choose to do it.
But on some level as well, even the just getting out of there for a walk or something when you're in that intense pressure.
It's critical to get outdoors. I mean, if you go out on Christmas Day, as we always do in the afternoon, you see all these people walking, and you can tell from their faces how they feel
intent.
About Christmas. That some of them are walking so fast that you know that they look kind of determined or anxious, and you know that they're either recovering from or preparing for, as they see it, the ordeal ahead. And I actually think the stress of Christmas that Irish people sort of have an understanding of it. Because when I was growing up, it was quite common for people to ask you after Christmas, how did you get over the Christmas? Yeah. You know, as if it was a dose of the flu. So I think there is a sense of that it can be a bit of an ordeal.
Okay. And any other practical tips for people to minimise the stress for themselves?
Well, I think any amount of work and effort and stress is much easier to bear if you know why you're doing it, if you can sort of think about it in a deeper way. And for people who have a religious faith, then Christmas has a built-in meaning. In fact, it's interesting that many of the major faiths in the world, you know, the Christian tradition, the Muslim tradition, the Jewish tradition, all have major celebrations in December. And I think that probably is not coincidental. I think it's an echo of the celebration of the solstice millennia ago, when at the darkest time of the year, when food is generally scarce and people are facing a very uncertain prospect of how they're going to get through it and whether the new year will bring them luck, if you like. I think that Christmas was a way of defying it. It was a sort of way of saying we're all still here. My father used to have a phrase about we never died a winter yet, you know. And I think it's probably a very old sense that we cling together and we celebrate it in defiance of all that uncertainty.
That's the best piece of advice ever. So reframe it all and think of it that way. There was one other thing I wanted to ask you about. Oh, yeah. There's a few people there saying they find Christmas quite depressing. People do get depressed at Christmas, don't they?
They do, actually. Yeah. I think people's mood sometimes dips. The very first signal of Christmas, the first Christmas music on the radio, the first decorations appearing. And that's usually, again, one of these secret anniversaries of the heart, that what people are doing is tunneling back to the Christmases before, you know, to especially in childhood. And some kids had terrible Christmases, you know, because there was somebody drinking too much or there was a lot of conflict in the family or there was a breakup of some kind, you know, these sort of fractures that happen in families. And all the feelings come back, all those feelings of bitter disappointment and anxiety and dashed hopes. And I think sometimes people have that dip in their mood around Christmas, but they can't figure out why it's happening. And for some, of course, it may be just part of that seasonal depression.
But helpful so to think of it that actually what this emotion I'm feeling now is about the past. It's not about.
I think very often when feelings come unbidden, then I think very often it is because something is reminding us consciously or unconsciously that when we were in this situation before, when we saw these faces or we were in this particular place or this smell that we're getting, it can be any of your senses that it's reminding us that it's associated with something that wasn't good. I think that we embody a huge amount of our experiences in life, particularly in childhood when we didn't have the words to describe them. And we just really are left with these bodily reactions, your body signalling to you, this might mean danger. And similarly, of course, on the other side, people who have very happy memories of their childhood and of Christmas and so on, their mood lifts almost automatically because of the same process going on.
We could keep going here. Like, this is close to the surface for everyone, Maureen. Sibling rivalry and people taking over, that can be tricky too, says a texter who obviously has a problem with sibling
Very
rivalry and people
tricky.
Taking over Christmas. Yeah. The other side of the grandparent thing is, says somebody, how come that middle generation think that having lived and worked for years that we know nothing? Despite our age, our age does mean that we have years of experience and knowledge under our beds, and absolutely. And then I'm going to finish on this one from Patrick and Rita. And I couldn't agree more with Patrick and Rita. We've gone to Lanzarote for a number of years. Sunshine on the beach on Christmas Day. I recommend everyone try it out if you can. Forget about family and friends and the old-fashioned Irish custom of generations gathering. So there you go.
There you go.
They got in first with the opt-out in their family, clearly. They said, they announced we're going to Lanzarote. Nobody else is able to go to Lanzarote now because they've done it. Okay, Dr. Maureen Gaffney, clinical psychologist and writer, thank you very much and happy Christmas.
And the same to you, Brendan.
Email brendan@rte.ie.